it loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get crazy.
You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's the Cube Show.
This is All Born Radio.
I'm a good person.
You know, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God want us to win the World Championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I?
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
Sports Radio 730 and 1039 The Yump. Appreciate you guys tuning in. And you can always listen to the show online. You can download the app, listen via your cell phone, iPhone or Android. A couple different ways that you can do it there. Now, every morning, we welcome in our friend Conrad Thompson from First Family Mortgage. Now, a little bit weird today, but for some reason, we're not able to access the computer.
I can't play the Conrad Thompson. Oh, you know, Chuck's gone. Never mind.
No. Conrad Thompson.
Now, here's the weird part of this.
Chuck was literally changing. Our streamers are changing online today, and the configuration has to change. That's why I couldn't access until literally seconds ago.
Thanks, Chuck, for
Chuck, our engineer, man.
Our computer while
Make
we're
sure
actually...
stuff works.
So I'm searching through my Apple Music to try and find 2001 Space Odyssey, the song. That's the name of the song, right? Is that the name of the song, Conrad?
It's not actually the name of the song, okay. But it's the theme from that movie.
I got you. So I'm trying to find the song because I was going to try to do like a bootleg version of like playing the song on my phone through the microphone and say, Conrad Thompson, to welcome you in. But thankfully, I didn't have to do that. We got the, kind of the real one in. What's going on, Conrad?
Man, I'm great. I appreciate you guys having me on. And I'm sure our listeners appreciate that we sound a little better than normal. So roll tide on that.
Absolutely. So,
Chuck the engineer, not all bad. Come on.
So there's a really good article suggested to you by our friend Spencer Hall of EveryDayShouldBeSaturday.com and at EDBS SBS on Twitter, talking about the future of football. And he kind of takes a different twist on it by bringing in sort of science and physics and how space and force and collisions and things of that nature can sort of change the game, and then it's going to have to change at the high school level first, if it's ever going to truly change to where it's going to be sustainable long term, speaking really long term. And we talked a lot about the kickoff, and that sort of took Arky and I into a discussion of realistically, how do you change the kickoff and keep football as what we know it? I'll ask you our cold question of the day, Conrad. Would it bother you if football removed kickoffs?
It would be different, but I do think it's necessary, and I hope and expect a lot of change over the way we have commonly enjoyed football if it means that people have longer, healthier lives. So put me down for I like a kickoff, but not so much that I'm okay with the consequences. I would be okay with them just starting, you know, kind of like they do in overtime and get the ball on your, you know, 20 or 25, obviously the other end of the field, but you know what I mean. Just go ahead and start that way after each score, and that's fine with me. I mean, most of the time, that's where it's going to wind up anyway. And then nobody's hurt.
Right, and that's kind of the basically what Spencer was saying is I would rather have football change, maybe not be as profitable at the higher levels, but be more sustainable long-term if we make these changes. Because obviously we have it around in our communities and we're able to enjoy it for a lot longer period of time. Is there an alternate that you can think of from, because we kicked it around, no pun intended. I mean, the only thing that I could think of was you back it up and you let a guy kick off and you have the chance to fair catch it. If you don't, maybe you get the ball at the 20. If you fair catch it on the 30, you start your drive there. Our listeners are doing a great job tweeting in by saying, all right, what happens when you're down? How are onside kicks affected? I mean, think about it, Conrad, from a strategy standpoint, from a viewing perspective, you got 8 or 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter and you're down 3 scores. That game's over. You're done. There's no need to watch if you can't flip possession like that. So can you think of any alternatives, or is it just get rid of these, put the ball in the 25 and let's go?
You know, I don't know that there is a happy medium. I really do feel like, you know, I would rather sacrifice some games that we know there's no chance of it being a comeback and it's just over, if it meant that people's lives, you know, weren't over as quickly. So I'm okay with this having to change in order for it to stay around. I don't want to imagine, you know, the United States 40 years from now, where part of our landscape and fabric of America doesn't include football. So many of our family memories, at least in my household and my family, are around football. We get together to watch the games. I have aunts and uncles that I don't see throughout most of the year, but for certain football games, we're there together. And if that pulls away, it affects a lot more than just football, a lot more than just dollars and cents. But I would like to not be entertained at the expense of people's, you know, health. So I'm okay with forfeiting the onside kick, and there being some games that are just blowouts, if it means that we get to keep the rest of the games. Put me on board with this. I'm going to co-sign that.
Conrad, yesterday was the anniversary of Miss Elizabeth passing. I think it was 14 years ago. Where does she stand as far as the ladies of wrestling? Do you think she would be number one on the list?
She probably shouldn't be, but from the WWE's perspective, she probably is. She was the first person that Vince McMahon pushed and gave a solo push of the female variety. And they built a lot of business around her, you know, in the height of the WWF, 86, 87, 88, 89. But in my opinion, no. I mean, nobody really can tell you what Miss Elizabeth did. You know, she just stood there and looked pretty, and Vince pushed her. And so that's cool. But as far as contributions to the business and sacrifice and, you know, all the stuff, like, nobody could say, oh, my favorite Miss Elizabeth moment is, I got nothing.
Can I just say she did a great job at that, by the way? She did that very well.
When it comes to doing nothing, man, there was nobody better at it than her. So, yeah, she should be, you know, remembered for, you know, what we remember her for, which is being the pretty girl on wrestling when we were little kids. But I don't really have anything else that I can contribute for that. Unfortunately, the story is always going to include, you know, her passing, and she didn't, you know, pass away of natural causes per se. So that's unfortunate that that's part of the conversation now. And I'm sure she was a nice lady, but it's not like she had matches or promos or whatever. She was just there, and she did a good job at what they asked her to do.
Who would you rather have above her?
As far as contribution to wrestling?
Yeah. Who's Conrad like better? Is Conrad a Sunny girl?
Yeah, Sunny was cool for what she was too, but again, she didn't really do anything, but she at least had some sort of managerial effect, and she had promos, so she could make you hate her or make you like her, and she would, you know, get involved in matches. Miss Elizabeth did none of that. She just stood on the side, so she had no involvement. So I do think that Sunny was a more modern, more involved version of Miss Elizabeth, but as far as, you know, lady wrestling goes, it's probably Trish Stratus and then maybe Charlotte, you know, because you're talking about the evolution of women's wrestling. If you go way back, you know, somebody's going to say, oh, what about Fabulous Moolah? Well, okay. I mean, I guess the Four Horsemen were good football players too, if we want to go back to leather helmets. It just kind of is what it is.
I think we're all doing Mabel a disservice here. I just want to say that. It's not even right what we're doing.
I love Sable.
How many grannies got in the ring and actually took a bump? I mean, let's be real.
Oh, who cares?
No, yeah, I'm not arguing that. When you can take a top rope power bomb at 80, you know, me and Archie Shea and Cole Kublik want nothing to do with a top rope power bomb, and Grandma's up there at 80 doing it. Okay, you win.
Pretty good stuff. Hey, you keep up with, you've actually been a part of Richard Deitch's podcast. You've been a guest. He talks often about this ESPN stuff, the layoffs, the business aspect. So we are sort of focusing throughout the show today on the future of football. From a business perspective, when you see guys sitting out bowl games, You see maybe inflated TV contracts that are not going to be able to be replicated the next time that they come around. Is there a genuine concern from your standpoint on the business side of the future of football?
No doubt about it. Football's on the way down. We've seen it at its peak. It can go nowhere but down from here. Viewership's down, which means television rights are going to come down, which means contracts are going to come down. But it's just like everything else. You know, 10 years ago, we were talking about a housing bubble. Well, we've had a little bit of a sports bubble, and that bubble is bursting right now in front of our eyes. When you see, you know, the way people are consuming sports and just all entertainment. 10 years ago, Netflix was a DVD service that you knew somebody that, you know, I think I know somebody who has that. Now everybody has Netflix. So it's a totally different situation. I do think long-term football is on the downswing.
Conrad Thompson of First Family Mortgage with us. You're never on the downswing over at 1FMC.com. Tell our listeners how you can help them out today.
And a quick 10-minute phone call right now on your ride to work. I'm telling you, it's not a matter of if we can save you money. It's a matter of how much. We just helped the Moran family right here in Huntsville go ahead and consolidate some debt. Check this out. We even got them $45,000 back. They're going to use that cash to go ahead and upgrade their house. If there's one thing you could do to your house, what would it be? Now imagine if you got to do that with no money out of pocket. We helped the Moran family do that and at the same time consolidate all of their debt. So check this out. Their new monthly payments are $700 cheaper. They got the cash they need to go ahead and add some space to their house, upgrade their kitchens and bathrooms. They did all of that with no money out of pocket, got rid of their other debt, and it's still cheaper monthly payments. You're probably overpaying too, and you don't even realize it. Punch it in your phone right now. It's 425-0105.
Great stuff, Conrad. Appreciate the time. Look forward to catching up tomorrow morning.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Conrad Thompson joins us every morning from First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com. Also sponsor 10 After Tweet. You can tweet in at Cube Show, at Cole Kublik, at Arky Shea. We get to those now.
Bring me the tweets!
Who's your number one lady in wrestling? Trish Stratus, man. That went next level for me. I was a fan of Sable, too, though. But Trish Stratus.
Yeah, I would probably say Sable. I think she was, because she was like
she
the
was
first.
She was more the fire and like.
Right. Like, she could actually get in the ring and do some things. Was obviously.
Oh, that matters to you. Okay.
Interesting to look at.
Sure.
She was in. I think she was the first.
I would take
in
that
Playboy.
Interesting to look at. Okay. I would throw
intriguing,
that out there.
Intriguing.
No, I don't mind the word interesting. I just think.
So, yeah.
Pupils dilated a few times. Okay. Not the only thing that dilated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, probably for me, yeah.
Did you like Sonny?
Yeah, because I was an ECW fan back in the day, so, you know, I kind of got to know her there. Not, I mean, legitimately didn't get to know her, but that's where I sort of first recognized her. But, yeah, I think Conrad's right. She was good for what she did.
What about Luna Vachon?
No idea who that is. The girl that just went into the Hall of Fame that, like, showed her thong on, from her, on her pants that did the moonsault. She was kind of annoying. Lita, is that her name?
Yeah, Lita.
Not a fan.
Not a fan of Lita, huh?
No. Oh, I see who Luna Vachon is now. Yeah, wow. She was like China before there was China. I think China deserves a ton of credit for what she did.
I feel like they really like uglied her up for TV.
Probably, yeah.
She wasn't terrible.
I just like the ring announcer lady. The blonde girl that just that does the used to do the ring announcing for so long.
Oh,
I don't know her name.
I thought she was a brunette.
No. Andy Ramsden at Ramman 256 tweets in, I need kickoffs at Cube Show. Saucy Lady Tiger tweets, Sapphire greater than Miss Elizabeth. She at least danced with Dusty Rhodes. Jeff Kiger tweets, how about punting it instead of kicking off a tee? Line up helmet to helmet, no running start for kicking team.
Lillian Garcia, is that who you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, Lillian's a little bit all right.
Michael Blackburn tweets,
I think she retired like 2 years
she
ago.
She did.
Maybe.
Instead of onside kicks, if you successfully convert a two-point conversion, you get the ball back. Maybe push 2 points to 10-yard line. But now we're just changing everything.
I was about to say, that is a radical change.
William Roberts tweets.
Wait, hold on. We're playing make it, take it football?
Sounds like it, yeah. William Roberts tweets, changes a lot of game strategy at Cube Show. Dave Coffey tweets, some of the best plays in the history of the game were on kickoff returns. Music City Miracle is the first that comes to mind. Sure. Hashtag was there.
And again, if Alabama doesn't get that onside kick against Clemson, do they stop the momentum of Clemson?
Or Kenyon Drake returns the kickoff for touchdown.
Those are two big plays in that one game.
Andrew Hudspeth tweets, at Cube Show, what if kickoff players were interspersed on the field so they aren't running full steam? Have to wait for kick returner to touch the ball.
Oh, let's try to legislate that.
You'd still have a lot of big collisions because think about the momentum of the returner. He's gonna have a lot of speed built up. You don't have full speed on full speed, but you have full speed on some bigger dudes.
You're going to have a lot better field position for these offenses if you have to wait until the returner touches the ball.
Yes. Ray Sively tweets, do the Saints win that Super Bowl without the onside kick recovery?
Probably not. Probably not.
Our cold question of the day is, via Twitter, would it bother you if football removed kickoffs? Swaggy Vic responds, yes, it was the only time Mississippi State tackled Bama last year. There are some positives. Cam Walker tweets, going to make onside kick pretty tough. RKM Asylum tweets, do you put it at the 50 for symbolism and still opportunities for an onside? Johnny on the Cell tweets, as a fan of football, there is no way in Hades I want to take kickoffs from the game. It is hazardous, but it is too exciting. Tennessee Valley Tim tweets, I would hate to see kickoff go away. William Wise tweets, the fact many high schools are dropping the sport or changing the rules shows us what the future holds for football. Jordan Carpenter tweets, Spencer knows with his whole heart that only Nick Saban can ultimately save football.
My cat tweets, how about all of the kitty cats play baseball and basketball and leave football to men?
Kitty cats. Johnny on a Cell tweets, as a follow-up, would say any Bama fan want to see Kenyon Drake kickoff return touchdown against Clemson legislated away? I mean, I don't think they're going to go back and take that specific play away. I think it would still count, but at keeps it 1,000 EA6 four explanation points.
It's 10 times 100, by the way.
He tweets, tell that to the kids who only got football. Not tall enough for basketball or the other sports aren't where they raised to play. Because where I'm from, the sport of football saves lives, many lives, even if they don't make it to the NFL, they get to college for free. I like that a lot better than we better go out and start paying college football players. That's for sure. So,
B Rich is on the phone. B Rich, what's up, man?
What's up, fellas?
How you doing?
I'm great. I'm like y'all and like a lot of the listeners. I'd hate to see it go away, but I was driving around thinking, what if you got into a situation, this is just brainstorming here, what if you got into a situation where if a team was up 21 points, a kickoff automatically went out of play? That way, you're still in a competitive game. You don't take away the onside kick, but you're up 21. There's no kickoffs either way. You just start it, whatever, the 25. But if it's a tight ball game, then you're still kicking off, like and stuff.
It's definitely a possibility. I mean, I think if football is ever going to make this change, it's going to be sort of an all or nothing. I think they're going to either get rid of it and say, we're not doing it, or they're just going to leave it until something probably bad happens again, and then you pretty much have to.
Yeah, you're probably right. I was just trying to think of ways to, you know, still have it. You know, everybody would hate to see the onside kick go away. That's such a game changer, but you obviously don't want it to be so predictable either, but brainstorming here, fellas.
Yeah, we appreciate it, B Rich. It's tough to think about.
Change is hard. Look, people don't like the fact that the college football stops the clock on first downs.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's a lot of change, a lot of different things out there that people don't like. This is just a tall, tall ask of people who really like football because of what that moment means. Statistically speaking, again, the number of returns to go back to the 50 or for touchdowns, and especially those who actually hurt other players, they end up in significant injuries or worst case scenario, things like paralysis and death are very, very few. but they do happen. We saw what happened with the not Georgia Southern, the Southern player with Georgia a couple of years ago, Eric LeGrand, the player at North Texas. I think it was the one that got hurt in a game. It's just, I know you want to remove the injuries, and that seems to be the biggest, as Spencer talks about, the biggest injury that involves force. How do you tell an entire industry we're not going to do something that's been so crucial to the game for such a long period of time?
Bill Connolly has a new book out titled The 50 Best College Football Teams of All Time. He's going to join us next.
But Bama time!
To tell us how many of them are Bama teams right after this.
This Friday, you can check me out at Stand Up Live. I'll be there Friday for the 7 and 9:30 show, so you should go get your tickets. If you have not seen me do comedy, I promise you will laugh, especially if you do drink it beforehand, because that's kind of what makes it easier for me. So go to get your tickets for Friday night. I'll be there Friday night, 7 and 9:30 shows at Stand Up Live. If you haven't seen me do it, I'm telling you, do it big, Ben. And then we have friends of the program who go up there, and it will go after me. But I'm going to do a guest spot on Friday shows, so get your tickets now. Just $15. That's not bad for a date night. $15 a ticket. Go to standuplive.com to be able to get them. Friday night, May 5, 7 and 9:30. You don't have to go to both shows. You can just go to one of them.
I'm looking forward to checking you guys out Friday night. I'll be at the early show because the late show is not one that I would be able to stay awake for. That is just not real. No chance that I would be able to stay awake for that and be able to come check you guys out. But I am going to be at Stand Up Live for the early show Friday night. Check out Yamaha and, of course, our very own Arky Shea with his – I wish you guys could see the legal pad of jokes you're going to attempt to tell.
Yeah, it's my set. So
a lot of jokes.
I don't want you to look too much, because you're not gonna laugh spontaneously.
Let's welcome in Bill Connolly of SB Nation to the show. You can follow him on Twitter at @SBN_BillC. New book out: The 50 Best College Football Teams of All Time. Bill, good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing very well. Tell us just, I guess, obviously we know the premise of going out and finding the 50 best teams ever, but what struck this idea for you to put it into a book?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, I think one of the most interesting things about college football is it's, you know, the millions and millions and millions of people obsess over it, but it has almost no shared history. So I wanted to write a book about college football's history as a whole. And so the title is a counterplay. It's a complete misdirection. It's the 50 teams I wanted to write about, the 50 most interesting teams that I wanted to write about. And so that encompasses a lot of ground. You know, Alabama has a couple teams in there. Auburn has a couple teams, but nobody has more than two. I think 42 programs are represented, and it covers innovation and culture and all the things that kind of unfolded in college football over the last 100 years.
Let's talk about some of these teams. We'll start with Alabama and look at the 1970 Alabama team. Why was that one that you wanted to choose?
I found myself interested a lot in writing this book, or putting together the list of teams for this book. I always found myself interested in the teams that kind of started a great run. I put 04 Texas in there instead of 05, for instance. 02 USC instead of 04 or 05. But 70 Alabama team was fascinating. You know, there's obviously the most well-known piece of that team is in regard to, you know, getting thumped by USC and the fact that kind of ushered in the segregation area, or the integrated roster era, I should say. And but that wasn't really the there's a long story behind that. It wasn't a cause and effect kind of thing. It was still there. It also led Bear Bryant to move into the wishbone after his offense grew a little stagnant that year. There was a lot going on there, and it just set the table nicely for an incredible run in the 70s.
Kind of cool too that some of the other SEC teams that you have, 2011. LSU is a team that's here. Why was that one that was maybe intriguing for you?
I think, well, I mean, the personality involved was one thing. The defensive innovation involved with that team. Alabama obviously had an amazing defense that year, but the way that LSU was built around its defensive backs and had so many playmakers back there, it was really just a different type of defense. That team was, on top of all that, that team also had maybe the best regular season run of all time. They just they very much failed to stick the landing with that season, but they were just a really, really interesting team that I think, among other things, is proof that if you don't stick the landing, we view your entire season differently, even though those first 13 games were incredible.
By the way, stick the landing for 2011 LSU might be the most accurate description I think I've ever heard. It's the first time I've heard that.
Yeah, I mean, that was an incredible team, and they laid such an egg at the end of the year. And it really did color what was otherwise just such a unique season, such unique personalities there. I had to write about that one.
You've got 1991 Washington, and this is a team that I love to watch because I only played defense in high school. I didn't play offense until I got to college. So Steve Entman was a guy that I emulated and wanted to be like and was sort of a larger-than-life figure for me as a college football fan growing up. And keep in mind, the way that I was able to consume information about him was if there was an article about him in Sports Illustrated and maybe a game or two throughout the regular season. So I didn't get a ton of him, but when I did, he seemed to be this like incredible Hulk figure within college football. How much a part was he why you wanted to write about this team?
Yeah, I think, I mean, he was the leader in terms of just the raw talent, and we've seen plenty of times through the years that when you've got that center of gravity at defensive tackle, it changes, or on the defensive line at all, it just changes everything about the complexion of your defense. But really, that Washington team was, it's not supposed to be as easy as they made it look. When you think about, they were struggling in the mid-80s, their recruiting had fallen off a little bit, that's where you're supposed to make a bunch of assistant coaching changes and try to liven up your program, but they just kind of circled the wagons. He made one major change, brought in basically one guy, and they just figured out a different strategy. They started recruiting better, and that team had absurd talent on it. The 1991-92 Washington teams were crazy talented, and of course then, there are some violations, and Don James kind of retires out of protest. So a lot of the endings in these chapters, these program runs, they're not always very happy, but it was an incredible just culmination of talent with that team.
Bill Connolly of SB Nation joining us. The new book is out now, The 50 Greatest College Football Teams Ever. It's intriguing, some of the other teams that you do have on here that I want to ask you about. I think one that pops out for me would be 94 Nebraska. We know 95 Nebraska is viewed as maybe the best. Some people say the best, maybe the most dominant college football team ever. But that era team under Tom Osborne, it's kind of crazy to think about what today's college football is, Bill, and how we cover it, and maybe what was not uncovered behind the scenes about a lot of those Nebraska clubs.
Yeah, and it had to go, some of the off-the-field issues, it did have to get mentioned. But choosing 94 over 95 was, I think, just pure storytelling. It's hard to and I have some great, incredible teams in the book, 1945 Army's in the book. Plenty of amazing teams are there. But it would be very boring to write or read a book of just 50 amazing teams because every chapter would start to sound like another one. And so the 94 Nebraska team was far more interesting to talk about when you think about Tommy Frazier, randomly, having to deal with blood clot issues, backup quarterback has to lead them through a few tough weeks, and the pieces all come together. And the fact that Osborne had been there almost 20 years without a national title, he was Mack Brown. He was I don't even know the newest example of this, but just the guy who couldn't win the big one or whatever, and then he unleashed three incredible teams in a four-year span. Like Washington in a way, it was the culmination of just better recruiting with some risks involved, and a really interesting up and down fall.
Bill Connolly of SB Nation joining us now, discussing his new book, The 50 Best College Football Teams of All Time, obviously available at Amazon. And you look at some of these teams we've already discussed, and I think that Washington team would qualify. You talked 99 Virginia Tech. But I want to know, who was the biggest maybe circus team as far as sideshow, everything going on with them? Because I see 1988 Miami, and that would probably be my candidate of these 50 teams. But who was maybe the biggest circus as far as just everything that was happening around these teams that you wrote about?
Yeah, started in the 80s, I guess you could call it personality of these teams got a little more interesting. And part of that is television. You know, we got to learn more about these teams because they were on television more, starting with the Supreme Court case in 83, the Regents versus Oklahoma. You know, that was kind of a turning point in us being able to learn about the individuals involved with these teams. So 85 Oklahoma with Bosworth and Holloway and Keith Jackson and all those guys was pretty ridiculous. 88 Miami, there's a nice run there. I mean, you know, going through maybe even 2011 LSU, honestly, with that wasn't necessarily an off-the-field circus, but the personality involved was a lot of fun to talk about. I will say, though, only one team in the book got its quarterback kicked off the team right before the year because of a panty raid, and that was 57 Auburn. So maybe that's your answer right there.
Can you divulge a little bit more into that story?
That's always been the legend. You know, their returning quarterback got kicked off the team. Nobody really knew why, but that was an era where panty raids had become a big thing because there were girls on campus all of a sudden, and that was kind of a new change over the last 10 years. And so he gets kicked off for that. They make themselves more of a remodeled defense-first kind of team, and they go out and dominate and barely give up any points and win the national title.
2013 Auburn is on your list as well. They're an intriguing team for a couple different reasons, but I would just like to know from you why you chose to have them on this list.
I mean, I'm going to say it was more than just wanting to transcribe the Rod Bramblett radio calls of the two big plays at the end of Georgia and Alabama games. That was the reason behind it. Those dramatic moments, I did get to transcribe a few of those calls, which was a lot of fun. When you have that kind of season, and when you've won a lot of close, dramatic games even before those two games, that fits the bill for me. That was a very fun story to go back and kind of relive a little bit. And I mean, Alabama fans, you know, they're the ones who you know, have won the national titles in the 2010s. But I got LSU and Auburn in there instead of them. So, maybe I shouldn't have mentioned that.
No, it's great stuff, Bill. We appreciate the time. Very intriguing book. I've already begun to dive into a couple different teams on the list, and appreciate you sharing with us today. We look forward to getting into it a little bit more, but let's have you back soon. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Bill Connolly of SBNation.com. Can follow him on Twitter at @SBN_BillC. The 50 best college football teams of all time is available now at Amazon. 1925 Alabama also made the list.
How innocent of a time was it when you could get kicked off a team for a panty raid? Like, just the term panty raid. Now, again, understand what a panty raid is. It's a young man or a group of young men violating a woman's space by going into her room and grabbing underwear that she does not want other people grabbing. But it's a lot different than just screaming out in DMs asking for people's nudes, you know?
Nobody getting kicked off any teams for that today.
Now, hold on.
No.
You got a bunch of renegades on your team? Is that what you want to tell me?
No, I'm saying if a guy were to go into a girl's dorm room and take a couple pairs of panties, unless he was like trying to sell them online or something, he ain't getting kicked off the team.
We got people brawling in other schools getting kicked off the team. Just also want to just throw this out there. What a soft sell panty raid is what it actually is. It's theft of undergarments in violation of a woman's page. It's kind of harassment. But we're like, at the panty raid. It's so cheeky.
All right, we need to get to a break. When we come back, coaches' rankings are back. How would we rank coaches if they were recruits? Who we got coming up today?
The American Conference.
Oh, yeah.
There are some interesting names in here.
We'll get to that right after this.
Call each week about this time.
I don't know why you do that. You came in excited there.
Well, because I like doing radio and I like doing this segment with you right here on the Cube Show. Each week we basically rank the coaches. We go conference by conference, and we have a star system, basically kind of like recruiting does with athletes. We have a star system to determine how good or not good these coaches are. Now, our star system, based on our infinite research, has basically given you a star for each one of the following categories: bowl appearances, bowl wins, 10-win seasons, conference championships, national championships. Now, there is some flexibility. We are allowed to argue one way or the other, one star higher or one star lower than what these categories actually give. But outside of that, we will then rank them by the end of this segment. Today's conference is the American Conference. Some very interesting names that I think we need to get discussed here. First, from Cincinnati, Luke Fickell. Luke Fickell had his first season with Ohio State in 2011. This will be his first season at Cincinnati. So technically one season, 6 years ago, they did go to a bowl game. They lost that Gator Bowl. But no bowl wins, no 10-win seasons or conference championships or national championships. According to this system, he is a one-star coach. Is that fair?
See,
and you cannot keep giving me this. He made it to be a head coach in this era,
but he also has had success as a coordinator. If we're just grading him
as a head coach,
yeah, he's a one star.
All right, fair enough. Now we go to the Connecticut Huskies. Randy Edsall, their head coach, 17 seasons as a head coach, the majority of them with Connecticut.
The rare there and back.
Yep. 7 bowl appearances, 3 bowl wins, no 10-win seasons, 1 conference championship, 0 national championships. According to this system, he is a 3-star coach.
Ooh. I was actually contemplating how I was going to have to build my argument to take him from a 1 to a 2-star with you, but you're going to go 3-star. I'll allow it. I think against the competition that he's been facing and where he's recruiting, I'm cool with it.
Does it hurt his argument for 3 stars that he went to a Big Ten team and then could not handle it as a Big Ten team and then came back to the – well, listen, he went 2-10, 4-8, 7-6, 7-6, 2-4, and was fired midway to the season.
I wouldn't quantify that as couldn't handle it. I would quantify it as wasn't good. But,
couldn't handle
3-star is actually a little bit gracious in my mind, but I'm not going to argue with you.
Okay, then I will listen to your argument for 2-star, and I'm living that. This will be his first season back at Connecticut, by the way. Moving forward to East Carolina, where the head coach is Scott A. Montgomery, going into his second season at East Carolina. Last year was 3-9, so clearly no bowl appearances, no wins, no 10-win seasons, no conference championships, no national championships. The system has a 0-star head coach. Is that fair? Because I think it is.
Yeah.
1 season, 3 wins, doesn't give you a star. Next up, we go to Houston. The American Conference continues with Major Applewhite, 1 game as a head coach. It was a bowl game. Lost the Las Vegas Bowl. So, clearly, no bowl appearances that he earned. No wins, no 10 wins, no conference. Major Applewhite, zero-star head coach right now?
Yeah. Fair enough. I'm cool with it.
If you have 1 career victory, unless it's the national championship, I don't know if I can give you
a star. I don't know how that's going to happen. The interim?
Cole, we got a couple of interesting names coming up, but first I got to get through Memphis' own Mike Norvell, who has had 1 season at Memphis. He was 8-5, so that gives him 1 bowl appearances. They lost the Boca Raton Bowl. No 10 wins, no conference, and no national championships. This system has him as a 1-star coach. Now you'll remember that Houston game,
of course, big win for that team,
and a big win for you on the social media based on video that was shot during that game.
Look, he took over a Memphis team that lost one of the best players in school history in Paxton Lynch and had them back in a bowl. I would give him 2 stars because he's had some success as an assistant and coordinator as well, but I would go 2 stars. I know you have your math and you have your system that you utilize there, but I would argue 2 stars for Norvell.
After 1 season? I'm just...
There are high school kids that are 5 stars after 1 season.
And that's what that's
right after their freshman year. Do they even rank them at their freshman year?
Some only play their senior year. Some only play their some after they're just playing their junior year.
I'll listen to that argument.
You should.
Let's go to Navy, where they got the head coach Ken Niumatalolo, who is coached 10 seasons. Some numbers you may not know: 9 bowl appearances and 10 wins at Navy.
Okay.
In 10 seasons, I should say, 4 bowl wins, 2 10-win seasons, 2 conference championships. This system
I'm
has
very
a,
intrigued to see where you go with this.
This
one,
system
by the way.
Has him as a 4-star head coach.
I'll allow it.
I would
like
allow
it
too. I think other mitigating circumstances, like where he coaches, is yep. a big deal, especially to be able to have. I didn't know he had 9. I thought he had 6, but he had 9 bowl appearances.
I would say outs. Not let's not forget that winning streak against Army also, which I know Army's been down, but still, that's huge for someone in that position. I think outside of the Power 5, he would be, if you said, who's a 5, there's a 5-star or a small group of 5-star coaches outside of the Power 5, Ken Niumatalolo would have been on my short list, if not at the top of that list. That's not coaching at a Power 5 school.
Name you'd rather say more often this year, Niumatalolo or Tungavailoa?
Niumatalolo.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is that your Auburn in you? Is that what you're doing, that Auburn radio in you? In the American
maybe
Conference.
If it was Auburn to me, I'd probably be hoping to say Alabama's backup quarterback more, wouldn't I?
Maybe that means he's doing great. Who knows? Cole, now we know, go to SMU, where Chad Morris is the head coach. This is his 3rd season, so he's got 0 bowl appearances.
That's not going very great.
0 bowl wins, no 10-win seasons, no conference championships, no national championships. He went from 2-10 to 5-7 last year, so some improvement. But this system has a 0-star head coaching rating for Chad Morris after 2 seasons. Fair?
Zero?
I would listen to 1-star based on the fact that he improved by 3 games after 1 year.
And he was great as a coordinator at Clemson. That has to factor in.
Okay, he gets a star. We'll give him a star. Next up, this is the name I can't wait to get to, Charlie Strong at South Florida. He has a little less than
a roller coaster of a grading system this will be.
He has a little over 7 seasons. That includes the 2004 Florida Bowl game where they lost the Peach Bowl. But 5 bowl appearances, 3 wins, 2 10-win seasons, 2 conference championships, no national championships.
All coming at Louisville, right?
The
conference in 10-win season.
Only one of those notes came in Texas, which was 1 bowl game appearance.
Did he have
loss.
The bowl win over Florida?
He did.
He's done some good things. He's done some bad things. My guess would be that he comes in as a 3-star.
Yeah, this system has him as a 4-star coach.
No. No.
Yeah, I would listen to the downgrading of that. I would listen to the downgrading of that. And if you come,
this is what you,
if you'd
this
come
is,
to me right after Louisville?
Yes. Yeah. But I think he sort of falls into that category of what you often talk about with greatness in baseball, like a Craig Biggio or like an Omar Vizquel.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you were pretty good for a really, really, really long time doesn't make you great.
Right.
He's been doing some good things for a really long time that doesn't make him an elite coach.
Right.
And I think 4-star is knocking on the door of elite, and I couldn't have him there.
Yeah, especially since his 2 conference championships came – at the lower level school that he was apparently at the time. That's
correct.
Part of the Big East Conference. And then he went to a bigger conference and could not do anything but get to 1 bowl game in his first appearance.
Who was the next best team in that conference when he was winning?
Oh, in 2011, 2012, second best team in the Big East? I have to do some research.
West Virginia?
So 3 stars we'll give to Charlie Strong. By the way, not a bad answer. We'll go now to Temple, where their new head coach is Jeff Collins.
This is tough because it hits close to home here.
1st season, 0 wins, 0 losses, nothing across the board. This is him as a 0-star head coach, and I'm okay with that since he's never coached a single game. We have 0 stars for guys who have coached a game. I'm okay with Jeff Collins right now being a 0-star head coach as of May
2nd. Why don't we just have him as not ranked?
We have to rank all of them.
No. He has to be at least a 1 or 2-star based
Why?
On his resume as a coordinator. He has a resume. He's been a coach, just not a head coach.
We're ranking the head coaches.
Right. He is the head coach. He just hasn't been a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
I would give him at least a 2-star, but mm-hmm. that's just me.
You wouldn't. Okay. I definitely can't listen to two stars.
I'm biased.
Let's go. Just a couple more teams left, including Tulane, has Willie Fritz coming in as their head coach. Willie Fritz has going into his fourth season overall. He has one bowl appearance. Did not coach in their bowl game. That's Georgia Southern back in 2015. No 10-win seasons, one conference championship. This is him as a two-star coach, Willie Fritz.
Should have another conference championship. Wasn't eligible to win it with Georgia Southern. So I would probably give him three-star just based on what he did and how he did it. I mean, this is a team that was going from – they were moving up to Division I and had the best record in their conference. The only reason they didn't win it is because the conference didn't allow them to be eligible to win it. Mm-hmm. So I would give him 3 stars.
Mm. I'm going to keep him at 2. Because it's only been 3 seasons.
Yeah, you're a hater. We found that out in this whole thing.
2 stars is still pretty darn.
You're a hater.
2 stars is decent.
You hate these coaches.
How many stars can you get?
You're a hater.
Can you be a 5-star head coach in 1 year?
You are a hater.
Because Gene Chizik will be a 5-star head coach, according to this. Tulsa has Phillip Montgomery coming into his third season. He has 2 bowl appearances, 1 win, 1 10-win season, which was last year. No conference championships, no... national championships. 3-star coach, according to the system. Phillip Montgomery. In 3 seasons as a coach.
No way.
It can't be. And finally, Cole, Scott Frost coming into his second season as the head coach of the Central Florida Knights, Golden Knights. 1 bowl appearances, no wins, no 10 wins, no conference, no national. Has him a 1-star coach after 1 season. They get to bowl game. I think 1 star is fair. What do you think?
I'm cool with that.
Okay, so Cole, I guess overall it has as your 0-star coaches, Scotty Montgomery and Major Applewhite. Your 1-star coaches are Luke Fickell, Mike Norville, Chad Morris, and Scott Frost. The 2 stars, Phillip Montgomery, Willie Fritz, and Randy Edsel.
Jeff Collins
is a 0-star coach, Cole.
Technically 2-star.
Keep throwing that out there. Keep praying, buddy. Keep praying. Charlie Strong's a 3-star coach, and the 4-star coach out of this list is Ken Niumatalolo.
Very deserving. Very deserving. I agree. We missed Mike Griffith earlier in the show. He's going to join us after our next break, and we'll sort of continue discussing with him the future of college football. John Talty of AL.com wrote an article yesterday about the future of the business of college football and how that might impact the game moving forward from a revenue standpoint. So both of those still coming up, and they begin after this break.